Good morning. Today's daf in Kedushin Nun Ches. We're going to be starting at Nun Zayin Amud Beis. We're going to be starting at the two dots right in the middle of the Amud. We're going to Basar B'Chalav, Isuri Hana. So the topic under discussion for today are going to be the various Isuri Hana, where an attempt is made to be Mekadesh a woman using Isuri Hana. It simply does not work. The Isuri Hana does not have a value, does not have an asset value. And as a result of that, the Kedushin is not Chal. In order to be Mekadesh a woman, you have to be Mekadesh with either a pruta or shava pruta. It has to be a physical coin or it has to be something of value. So over here, if it has zero value, so therefore you cannot be mekadesh a woman with said item. So the various Isuri Hana, so the Mishnah gave us a listing. And what we're doing yesterday, today, is that we're peeling off all the Makaros in the Torah. How do I know these items are Asur B'Hana? Right? It's such a curiosity, but this is the way the Torah operates, and that is that the Torah prohibits numerous items. Some of them are only Asur B'Achila, and some of them are Asur B'Hana. Right? Yesterday, I don't know if I made this point really clear, but why not? Let's start off nice and fresh today. So yesterday, you'll notice that we didn't discuss Nevela. Right? You have an animal that's not kosher. The animal wasn't shafted properly. Or, for example, you have a trefa. Right? So a Nevela or a trefa. So you're not allowed to eat it, but you can get benefit from it. In other words, there for sure it has a value. Right, you go to the store. You have a dog. You're going to buy dog food. The dog food is treif, but at the same time, however, you can feed it to your dog. It absolutely has ana. You're going to pay good money in order to buy that dog food. I'm speaking to the dog lovers out there. I include myself, by the way, in that group. I've consistently said no to my family for years, so I am a dog lover. But no, I'm not ready for that responsibility. Anyway, So that's Asur B'Achila, but it's not Asur B'Hana. And yet there are a number of items in the Torah that are Asur B'Achila B'Hana. So the Torah is very clear about it, right? No, the Torah is not very clear about it. The Torah does not say what is Asur B'Achila and what is Asur B'Hana versus what's only Asur B'Achila. But we have a Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning it's okay. We'll be fine. Meaning that we have the written law and we also have the oral tradition as well. And the Torah Shebaal Peh tells us what's Asur B'Achila and what is Asur B'Achila V'Hana. So over here, yesterday's daf, today's daf, we're just going through the Torah Shebaal Peh. How do I know? What are the tips? What are the tells? What are the drashas in the Torah that teach us what in fact is Asur B'Hana? So you want the list, go back to yesterday's daf. I'm not going to do it again right now, but go back to yesterday's daf on Nun Zayin. Excuse me. Really, the truth of the matter is that you really want to look at Nun Vav. On Nun Vav Amud Beis, so the Mishnah gives us a listing of items that are Asur B'Hana, which means now that it has zero asset value, and you can't be mekadesh with it. I mentioned already yesterday, I think I mentioned it 2 days ago as well when we did the Mishnah, and that is that when something is Asur B'Hana, you could go so far to say is that you don't even own it, meaning because it has zero value whatsoever, so it's not just that it doesn't have any value, it's that you're no longer even the owner of that item. That's an extreme formulation of how to say it, but however you want to say it, you can't be mekadesh a woman with Isuri Hana. We're up to Basar B'Chalav, so that's where we're picking it up in the Gemara. We're on Nun Zayin Amud Beis, we're right at the midway point in the Gemara. Basar B'Chalav mean Nalan. How do I know that Basar B'Chalav is Asur B'Hana? Okay, so Detan de Beir Rav Yishmael. So here we go. One of the more famous drashas in Chazal. Basar B'Chalav happens to be very relevant. In other words, Basar B'Chalav, right, can happen in any one of our kitchens on any given day, cooking meat and milk together. All the laws of meat and milk are contained in the Gemara in Chulin, 8th Perek, if I remember correctly. So, but over here, all we're just trying to identify is that there is an Isur Hana when it comes to Basar B'Chalav, the Gemara darshins. Lo Sivasha Gadiba Chalevi Moshalosh Palmim, 3 times in the Torah. Parshas Mishpatim, Kisisa, and Parshas Re'eh. 3 times in the Torah, the Torah says that you're not allowed to cook a kid in its mother's milk. Kid, by the way, meaning baby goat. So, Echad Isur Achila, Echad Isur Ana, Echad Isur Bishol. 3 Isurim that the Torah is formulating. Even though the formulation of the Torah is exactly the same. It's the same 4 letters of the Torah. Same 4 words of the Torah, just repeated. But in other words, each one of them speaks to a different Isur. Isur Achila, Isur Ana, and Isur Bishol. Okay, the Masis Nelokei, Aitana D'Tanya, the Gemara points out, not everyone's on board with this idea. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Rav Shimon Ben Yehuda Amar, Basar B'Chalav, Asur B'Achila, Mutar B'Hana. Okay, so we have a Tana who's of the position that Basar B'Chalav, when meat and milk is cooked together, you can't eat it, but you can get benefit from it. Shenemer ki am kadosh atal Hashem elokecha lo sevasha gadiba chalev imo. Ulahalanu omer v'anshe kadosh tiyun li. So, what we have over here, let's call it Gzeira Shava, right? I think I'm most correct and accurate in describing it as Gzeira Shava. One pasuk cited is in Parshas Re, the other pasuk cited is in Parshas Mishpatim. However, both of them have the word kadosh. So, malahalan, asr b'achila mutar b'hana, afkan asr b'achila mutar b'hana. So, by the treifa, we know that a treifa is mutar b'hana, but the b'chav is also mutar b'hana. Okay. What is the Gemara doing over there? The Gemara is just simply giving us more information, meaning that even though the accepted halacha, the absolutely accepted halacha is that basa b'chal v'asasar b'ana, but yesh mi sha'omer. In other words, there is an opinion out there that says that's mutar b'ana. Chulin she'nishchetu ba'azara. Okay, and now we are up to the one of the last of the topics of that, which is asar b'ana. You have a non-carbon brought into the azara and shachted in the azara. Chulin she'nishchetu ba'azara. So, it's asr ba'ana minah animili. How do I know? So Amr Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Meir Amr Torah Shchot Li B'Shali V'Shocha B'Shocha. Okay, so the Torah gives very clear instructions in terms of where things need to be shechted. Shali, if it's something that belongs to me, i.e. it's a karban, so B'Shali. So it's supposed to be shechted in my area otherwise known as the Azara, the temple courtyard. And B'Shocha, meaning if it's chulin, B'Shocha. Well, you're going to be allowed to shechta anywhere outside of the Azara. So items that are consecrated are to be shechted in the Azara. Non-consecrated items are to be shechted outside the Azara. That's your starting point. Ma shali bishalcha aser, af shalcha bishali aser. And so now here's what we know. We know that if you take a carpet and shecht it outside the Azara, that is what's called chute chutz. The Torah is very clear. Shechting a carbon outside the area of the Beis HaMikdash is a serious violation of the Torah, right? It's the language, you've heard me say this before. The language that the Torah uses in describing it, it's like murder, right? Even though all you're doing, quote unquote, is just shechting a carbon outside the Azara. But the Torah speaks in very strong language, and the Torah tags on an Isser Kares. It is a Kares-bearing Isser to take a carbon shechting it outside the Azara. Right, it's a really serious offense. And that the Torah states clearly. So here's what we're going to do. So we're basically going to make a logical leap. If taking a carbon, shechting it outside the Azara, will invoke the Kares penalty, so why don't we also go in the other direction as well? I take a non-carbon and shecht in the Azara. The Torah doesn't describe. The Torah doesn't explicitly state what happens. But now, it's basically, isn't it just a mirror image? And that's the Gemara's argument. So, ima shali b'shelcha noshkares, av shali b'shelcha b'shali noshkares. And the Gemara says, and even though the Torah doesn't say kares, but can we argue kares? Now, this is a very interesting point of the Gemara. The Gemara wants to argue kares. In onshim and adin. You're going to hear that again and again throughout Shas, and that is that a penalty cannot be deduced via logic. You cannot use a logical argument to arrive at a conclusion of onish, a penalty. And over here, the Gemara is just throwing it out there. Well, maybe there should be karis as well. So the Gemara says, no, I'm a krav, al pesach olamor lo hivil, al kriv karban la'ashem, v'nichras, al karban enosh karis, al chun shenishchutu ba'azara, ein enosh karis. Okay, so the Gemara says no, because when you look at the Torah and its formulation of shchut echutz, the Torah says, El pesach olamor lo hivil, la kriv karban la'ashem, v'nichras. Only when I take a carbon and shecht it outside of the Azara do I get kares, but not the converse, not the inverse. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, well, basically what you did is you deconstructed now the entire argument. Meaning we try to make an argument that how do I know that Chulin Bazar is an Issa Daraisa? Well, it's really just the inverse of Shchut Echutz. Shchut Echutz is an Issa Daraisa. Chulin Shabazar is also an Issa Daraisa. But the Gemara says, yeah, but if I'm only being able to construct it using logic, the problem, of course, is that they're not the same. You just said it. You just highlighted that Shchut Echutz is an Issa Kares, and Chul Shabazara is not an Issa Kares. So now we know they're not the same. I can no longer use a logical deduction to teach me that it's an Issa Daraisa. So Elam Rabbi, so Rabbi says, you're right. Okay, so we're not going to use a Kal V'chomer. We can't use a Kal V'chomer, so we're going to have to use a classic drasha. Abaye has a tradition of the following drasha. Elam Rabbi Mahacha, so he's quoting. Okay, the Gemara doesn't say that he where he got it from, but you, of course, have to say that this is part of his Masorah. And that is that V'shachto, V'shacharoso, V'shacharoso, Tlatza Kray Yisera. Okay, so the Braisa that he's quoting notes that there are three psukim. Now, obviously, these three psukim are spread out, but they're all in Vayikra Paragimel, right? Ushchato Pesach Olamoed, and V'shacharoso Lifnei Olamoed, V'shacharoso Lifnei Olamoed. So Tlatza Kray Yisera Matam Olamar. So three times the Torah is telling us, oh, you know we're going to be shechting. I'll tell you where you're going to be shechting, in the Azara. Now, on three occasions, you have to tell me you're shechting in the Azara. Lefishin amar ki yirachak mimcha makom, vizavachta berichuk makom, atazovech viatazovech mimakom, abamakom karov, prat lechun shalo yishchitu ba'azara. Okay, so what is the, why the repetition of those psukim? So, and not only that, but each pasuk represents a miut. What we're doing is we're coming to limit and minimize. So, the Bryce is coming to tell us that, look, the Torah in Parshas Ray describes that, look, you're living far away from the Beis HaMikdash. Ki yirchak mimcha makom. And what happens over there? Vizavachta. So you're going to have a right to shecht. In other words, you're right, you want to eat meat. I know I do. So you don't live near the Beis HaMikdash. So you can't offer a carbon. So what are you going to do? So what you're going to do is that you're going to shecht an animal, meaning the Torah gives an allowance, a license to go ahead and shecht an animal, even though it's not a carbon. So berichuk makom atazovech viatazovech b'makom karov. Prat lechun shelo yishchitu ba'azara. And what the psukim in Parshas Re'eh comes to tell me is the following, that your license and allowance to take a non-consecrated animal and shecht it is only berichuk makom, only when you're outside the Beis HaMikdash, not when you're interior to the Beis HaMikdash. V'ein li ela tamimim, haru'uyim li karev. So, what we're now doing is that we have finally found a source in the Torah that teaches me about chulin shenishchutu bazar. I can't take a non-consecrated animal and shecht in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what we're going to do, this is classic, is give parameters and limits to this issur in the Torah. Over here, actually, it's not even going to be a limit. It's actually going to be more of an expansion, meaning what's included in the issur. So, ein li ela tamim amarin lekarev, minayin l'rabbos bali momen. What if the animal is a blemished animal? It's interesting because a blemished animal could not be brought as a carbon. So maybe it doesn't fall under the category of chulin shenishchutu ba'azara. No. Mar ba'ani es abali amomim shekein min machshir. Since categorically it's the kind of animal that could be brought as a carbon, so therefore it's included in the Isser. So minayin l'rabbos es achaya. What about wild animals? Wild animals which are absolutely kosher. Meaning, not every wild animal is kosher, but as long as it has, it chews its cud and has split hooves, so wild animals would be kosher. Deer, gazelle, right? Obviously, you need a mesora, but if they chew the cud and they have split hooves, so they are going to be kosher animals. But we all know that there is not a single chaya that is eligible to be brought as a carbon. So what if I took a non-consecrated chaya and shecht in the azara? Am I bound by that iser? Yes, I am. So marban is a chayshi b'shchita kebehema. Since you shecht it like an animal, so therefore it falls under the category of behema in that regard, and therefore falls under the iser of chulin shenishchutu ba'azara. Minan l'rabbos es ha'ofos, tamalama v'shchato, v'shacharoso, v'shacharoso. And now, right, remember the three-pronged, the repeated pasuk of you're going to be shechting it, meaning miutim, what is that coming to tell me? So the that comes to include even birds. Even if I shecht a non-consecrated bird in the azara, one is going to be bound by the iser. Okay, so now so far all I know is that the Torah tells me not to. I cannot take a non-consecrated animal and shecht in the azara. And we expanded in terms of our definition of what does it mean an animal, even a blemished animal, even a chaya, even a bird. Okay, now I know we're not allowed to. Now what if you do? So yachol lo yishchot in imshach yehimoto tamalam ki yirchak mimcha makom vizavachta. In other words, this is not a direct quote of the pasuk. We're kind of just picking out words from the pasuk, but obviously the key words over here. And what you're going to be doing is that you're going to be shechting and you're going to be eating. Masha tozevech berichuk makam ataocha ve'i ataocha masha tozevech b'makam karov. And the only allowance to eat are the things that you shechted outside the Azara. But you took a chulin, and you shechted it in the Azara, you're not allowed to eat it, period. Okay. So far, what we have established, what we now know, is that we have various drushas. Abaye provides us the Mesorah, the tradition, that teaches us that chulin shenishchutu b'Azara is, in fact, going to be in Is, not only in Issa Daraisa, but also Asar Barna. How do I know that the Isra Hana is going to even extend to Bale Momem? So, Mar Ba'ani Bale Momem, Shekein Min Machshir. Okay, it's going to. A lot of these Gemaras now are going to sound repetitive. They are, but they're not repetitive. Sorry, I know I'm confusing. They are repetitive, but they're not. Because over here, even though we're repeating the same points, but now we're just simply pointing out that not only is there going to be an Isra, but there's also going to be an Isra Hana. So we're going to just bring the carry over the Isra Hana to all of the above. I'm going to read quickly. So we're on the very top of Nun Ches Amad Aleph. So Minayin L'Rabbos Balei Momem, Arbaniya Balei Momem, Shekein Min Machshir. Uminayin L'Rabbos Zechaya, Arbaniya Zechaya, Shehi B'Shechita Gebehima. Minayin L'Rabbos Zechofos, Tamalam R'Shchato, V'Shacharoto, V'Shachar Oso. Okay. Fine. Yachol Lo Yishcho Vim Shachar Yishlechen L'Fnei Klavim. Okay. So here's what I now know. I now know that you're not allowed to chulin bazara. I now know that if you do, you're not allowed to eat it. How do I know that I'm not allowed to get benefit? Okay. Moments earlier, I misspoke, but it's okay. Not too late to edit. Previously, the Gemara just simply established that it's an Isra Achila. Now the Gemara is establishing that it's an Isra Hana. How do I know that? So, Tamalama lakelf tashachonoso, o soata mashlech lakelaviata mashlech chulin shenishkutu bazara. What can I give to a dog? I can give a treifa to a dog, but I can't give chulin shenishkutu b'azara. Now, interesting, by the way, what is the connection? What's the relationship between treifa and chulin shenishkutu b'azara? So Rashi over here points out, I'm going to just say the Rashi outside, but it's a critical Rashi. Look at that pasuk regarding treifa, right? And, well, the Gemara doesn't quote the whole pasuk. Let me cite the whole pasuk. This is also in Parshas Mishpatim. Ubasa basad de treifa lo sochelu. You know, when your animals the treifa don't eat it, like kelev tashlichunoso, you give it to your dog. What I missed, and I didn't miss it, but in other words, what I didn't emphasize is the first words in the pasuk. Ubasar basade treifa lo sochelu. You know, when you have meat that's out in the field and it's a treifa, so that you're not allowed to eat, but you give it to your dog. It's interesting. It says out in the field. What is that? What is the Torah trying to communicate to us when it says that the treifa is out there in the field? What it means is that there were no perimeter, there was no halachic perimeter. Asada is an open field. In other words, when you have something which is asur, that is not bound by any perimeter isurim, so under those circumstances, it is asur ba'achila, but mutar ba'hana. On the other hand, when I have an isur that is bound by perimeters, Chulin shenishchutu b'azara. What happened? Wrong location. You took a non-consecrated animal, you shechted it in the azara. So now that's an isser that is bound by perimeter. It's because you were in the wrong place. So now this is not just going to be asr, but it's also going to be asr ba'ana as well. Okay? Hopefully I expressed that well. Anyway, so we now have established that chulin shenishchutu b'azara is, number one, an isser d'oraisa. Number two, asr ba'achila. Number three, Asr ba'ana. Okay, it took a moment. All right, for those of you keeping track of time, like I am right now, that was almost 15 minutes of discussion regarding how do I know that chulin shenishchutu b'azara is an isur d'oraisa. There's no explicit psukim, and not only that, but the Gemara really struggled to find a drasha. The Gemara first thought that it could be a kal v'chomer. The Gemara backed away from the kal v'chomer. The Gemara then presented to us a drasha. Ashkachinu. Mar Yehuda l'Rav Yosef l'Rav Shmuel b'rei de Rava bar Barchana da v'kaim la'pischa de be'Rava, an assortment of Amoraim were by the yeshiva of Rava. So Amar lo Tanya mekadesh bepetach Amor bebasa b'chal v'chulin shenishchutu b'azara. Rabbi Shimon Amar mekudeshes v'chachamim Amar mina mekudeshes. So here a brisa. The brisa that's quoted is that if you make an attempt to be mekadesh a woman using petach Amor or basa b'chalav or chulin shenishchutu b'azara, So Rabbi Shimon's of the position the Kedushin works. He views all of them as an asset, meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, all three of these items are not Asar Bahana, but the Chachamim disagree. Now, we're used to hearing the Chachamim because that's the accepted viewpoint. Okay. Rabbi Shimon by Petra Chamor, we saw yesterday's daf. Rabbi Shimon by Basar B'Chalav, we saw at the very beginning of today's daf. Now, what about number three? Rabbi Shimon and Chulin Shenishchetu Ba'azara. So Rabbi Shimon's of the position that it is not Asar Bahana. Okay, so once again, a das yachid, a singular viewpoint, that chulin shenishchutu bazar is not asar bana. Am chulin shenishchutu bazar, Rabbi Shimon, lav da raisa. Interesting, by the way. The Gemara actually goes even a little bit further than the way I said it. All right. In other words, I said it's not asar bana. The Gemara's assumption over here is that it's not even an isar da raisa. In other words, the kavachomer we undone, so the kavachomer is not going to get us there. And what about the drasha of Abaye? So apparently Rabbi Shimon did not hold of that drasha. Okay. So, the Gemara says, okay, I am going to be a little bit confused because I have a conflicting brisa. Nun ches amin alef, a third of the way down. Right in the middle of the line. Uriminu. Rabbi Shimon Amar Chulin Shenishchutu Ba'Azara Yisrufu V'chein Chayi Shenishchutu Ba'Azara. What do you do with Chulin Shenishchutu Ba'Azara in terms of disposal? At the end of the Gemara in Temura, okay, this is the last parak of Temura and one of the last Mishnayos. So it talks about proper disposal of any carbon that was disqualified. Okay, now over here, we're not talking about a carbon that was disqualified, but still, it's Chulin Shenishchutu Ba'Azara. So the animal is no good. In other words, it's non-consecrated, that was shechted in the Azara, and it needs disposal. What is proper disposal? So according to Rabbi Shimon, you have to burn it. Okay. Now, what do you need to burn? So normally what you need to burn is nosar, right? And that's just an example. In other words, an actual carbon that becomes disqualified, and so the halach is that it requires sreifa. You have to burn it. Okay, if it is not a carbon that becomes disqualified, so disposal could just simply be burial, kavura. But there are items that require sreifa. So over here, at the end of Temura, Rabbi Shimon says, what do I do with chulin shenishchutu ba'azara? You burn it. So the Gemara says, wow. So burning it definitely gives you the sense that we're looking at an issur d'oraisa, not just an issur d'rabbanan. Okay. The truth of the matter is that in terms of arriving at this conclusion that because I need to burn chulin shenishchutu ba'azara as its disposal, as opposed to burial, and how we know that therefore it's an issur d'oraisa, so see over here the lengthy Rashi. I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside. Truth of the matter is I'm removing a couple of steps over here just for the sake of brevity and simplicity. But the point is that by virtue of the fact that we see that it requires such a high level disposal, we're looking at Issa Daraisa. So Ishtiku. So once he cited that the end of Temura, and once he showed him Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint over there, he didn't know how to answer. So also coming to Rabbi Amar Lohu Palga Uk Minchi. So now Rav Yosef, Rav Shmuel Berei de Rava. So they go to Rava, and they pointed out this question. So Amr Lahu, so Rabbi says to them, Palga Ukimchi. So, right, Palga means they basically somebody who is cantankerous, right? A quarrelsome individual. So it seems like he stumped you. Hacha b'mayiskin kegon shenishchutu v'nimtza treifa. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood. Over there, when at the end of Temur, when Rabbi Shimon was talking about disposal via burning, he was talking about where you shucked it and you discovered it to be a treifa. Rabbi Shimon Latami Ditanya, and this is Rabbi Shimon consistent with his viewpoint, which is a shochet is a treifa. V'chein a shochet v'nimtz a treifa. You shucked the treifa or you discover it's a treifa. Now, normally, when in terms of an animal being a treifa, it's usually discovery post-shchita. There are scenarios in which you already know it's a treifa before you shucked it. Okay, the Gemara and Chulin goes over this in more detail. Right now, just all we need to focus on is the following, and that is that in either one of those circumstances, Zevezech Chulin Ba'Azara, Rabbi Shimon Matir, Bahna V'Chachamim Osrim. So both of them are Chulin Ba'Azara, and Rabbi Shimon says that it's Mutar Bahna V'Chachamim say that's Asar Bahna. Okay? Why, according to Rabbi Shimon, is it mutar bahana? Because you didn't shecht it. Okay. This is an idea that expresses itself multiple times throughout Shas, according to Rabbi Shimon. Right? Just keep saying it again and again, and it really will filter in, right? And that is that according to Rabbi Shimon, anytime you shecht an animal, but it does not result in the eating of the animal, it's not a shechita. This is what's called a shechita she'ena ru'uya. We just went over this idea a couple days ago in the daf. So a shechita she'ena ru'uya, according to Rabbi Shimon, is not a shechita. Meaning, when does one violate shechita chulin she'nishchetu ba'azara? That's only when the chulin was shechted in the azara. According to Rabbi Shimon, if it's not actually shechted, i.e. it's chulin, i.e. it's a shechita she'ena ru'uya, so therefore it's not chulin she'nishchetu ba'azara. Okay, so in other words, so that's what we're describing, and that is, in such a situation does Rabbi Shimon say, if one is not violating the Isser Daraisa of Chulin Shenishchetu Ba'azara. Okay. Adkan. Okay, so, Chulin Shenishchetu Ba'azara. I know that was a complicated piece of Gemara over there. Is it an Isser Daraisa? So, the majority viewpoint is yes. Is it Asr Behana? Again, the majority viewpoint is yes. And it's debatable as to whether or not Rabbi Shimon disagrees fundamentally with that position, yes or no. Okay. Just as a quick summary and takeaway point of the Gemara. We continue. Okay. And the last words of the Mishnah, going back to Nunvav, is that what if I sell any of these items that are Asa Bahana? Is the status now going to transfer over to the money? And the answer is no. No. The status does not transfer over to money. Okay, can I be selling my basa b'chalav? The answer is unequivocally no. The Torah prohibits any benefit from basa b'chalav. And what if I did? The funds that were gained from that sale are not going to be asa b'hana. What you did was wrong. You violated the Torah. But the funds do not gain that status. That's what the Mishnah tells us so clearly. You take those funds that were gained from basa b'chalav, you could be mekadesh a woman with those funds. Okay, now, how do I know that? That's the Gemara's next point. Well, the Torah gives us the exception. The exception is Avodah Zarah. You have Avodah Zarah, and you try to exchange, barter Avodah Zarah, sell Avodah Zarah. That which you have gained from the Avodah Zarah will have Avodah Zarah status. So the Torah is now telling us that in Avodah Zarah, and only in the case of Avodah Zarah, do we have this idea that the gains of Avodah Zarah had the status of Avodah Zarah. V'nelef mina, now the Gemara says, now slow down. Maybe that's not the exception, maybe that's the rule. So the Gemara says, Mishum davi avodas kocham v'shviya shneksum v'mbam kecha v'choshneksum v'mbam kecha rei malamdim. Yes, if Avodah Zarah was the only example in the Torah, so then you're right. That would then serve as the rule, not the exception. We have two different halachas in the Torah, in which the gains of the Isser is going to be like the Isser, which now means they are the exceptions, not the rule. One is Avodah Zarah, which we already established. What about the other? Shvius. Let's learn it together. Avodah Kochavim Hadamar and Shvius Mayhi. Yovel Hi Kodesh Yelachem. Makoshof Isis Damav Ashvius Tofeses Dameha. Okay, so by Shvius, if I go ahead and take something, exchange it for Shemitah, it will have that Shemitah status. And over here, the status of Shemitah is that it has Kedusha, it has to be consumed within a certain time frame, etc., etc. So, Ima Kodesh Tofes Estamav V'yotze L'chulin, Ashriyas Tofes Estamav V'yotze L'chulin. Well, maybe Shemitah behaves just like Kodesh. You know what happens when I go ahead and the Gizbar sells Kodesh? It leaves its Kedusha. In other words, it's Yotze L'chulin. I redeemed it. Maybe the same thing is true regarding Shemitah. No. Tamalamar tiyeh behavyasot tehei. The Shemitah will always perpetually be in a state of Shemitah, even when exchanged. So Kate said, the Gemara says, let's play that out. How will that look? Lakach beper shviyas basar elu ve'elu amit ba'arim ba'shviyas. So let's say you exchange Shemitah for meat. Okay? In other words, you have Shemitah produce. You're not interested in vegetables right now. Okay, sounds like me talking. Right now, what you would like is some meat. So I take my Shemitah produce and I exchange it for meat. So now what's going to happen is that meat that was gained by Shemitah, so that's going to have Shemitah status. Is man beer? I need to get rid of that. I need to get rid of that meat. Now, babasa v'dagim yotzah abasa v'nichnasu v'dagim. Now, it's going to sound strange if this is the first time you're hearing this, although the Gemara repeats this point numerous times throughout Shas, right? Today's daf being one of the examples. And that is, now let's say I take that meat. That meat has the kedusha of Peir Shvius, and I exchange it for fish. What's going to happen now is that the kedusha is going to jump from the meat to the fish, even though the original Shemitah is always going to be in a perpetual state of kedusha, but after that point going forward. In other words, on the second exchange, third exchange, fourth exchange, v'chule v'chule, the kedusha jumps to the item it was exchanged for. So yatsa basav v'nichnasu dagim v'dagim, but dagim yayin yatsu adag v'nichnasu b'yayin. Every exchange, the kedusha is going to jump to the next item.
No, but the item that it jumps from, is that considered
hegdus? No. The kedusha shmita left. So b'yayin shemen yatsa yayin v'nichnas shemen haketzad acharon acharon nitvas b'shvias. And peire atzmo aser. And so the correct conclusion is that on the original Shemitah, that always will have Kedusha Shvius. And then for every exchange subsequent, only the item that it was exchanged for is going to have the Kedusha, not the item that it was exchanged with. Hanicha, so what do I have now in the Torah? Not one, but two different examples in the Torah where the gain of an Isser is going to have the same status. I have it by Avodah Zarah and I have it by Shemitah. So because the Torah now gives two examples, that is now the exception, not the rule, because of this idea of Shnei Ksuvim. You know what's going to happen next. The Gemara does this every time. There is a school of thought, right, here in Kedushin. We've seen this a number of times. There is a school of thought, right, but Lamed Vav, when we went through all the Zman Grama Gemaras, right, the Gemara introduced us to. There is a school of thought that if there are two exceptions in the Torah, they are actually the rule, not the exception. So the Gemara says, so if I'm of that school of thought, how do I know that these two now are not the rule, but rather the exception? So the Gemara says, Mi'ute ksive. Ksiv hacha ki cherim hu. Ksiv hasam yovel he in midiachrini lo. So the Gemara says is that if you look at these two psukim, the two exceptions of Avodah Zarah and Shemitah, the Torah's formulation is bederech miut. Exclusionary terms used in both of those circumstances. Telling me, teaching me, that these are the exceptions, not the rule. Okay. The gains of Isuri Hana do not have the status of Isur Hana, with two notable exceptions of Avodah Zarah and Shemitah, and that is a recap of the last 10 minutes of the Gemara. Okay, let's continue. We're on the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Ches Amud Aleph, and our last sugya here in the second parak. Hamakash Bechumos of Amaisos of Amatanos. So, let's say I have truma. Okay. Now, how did I get that truma? I'm not a Kohen. Hold that thought. We're going to, in a moment, unpackage that idea. But I have truma. Now, of course, I'm not allowed to eat the truma. I'm not a Kohen. Right? My eating of the truma would represent a significant isser. A zar she'achal truma, a non-Kohen eating truma, is the chayiv misa bidei shamayim. Very, very significant. So, but meanwhile, I can go over to a woman and say, hey, I got my hands on some truma. And, all right, I'd like a lifelong relationship. Okay. And I'm going to give you the truma, and that will be the kesef kedushin. Does that work? The Mishnah says, yes, it works. And not only is that true by truma, it's also going to be true by maaser. It's also going to be true by the matnos kahuna. Every time you shecht an animal, you have to be giving parts of the animal to a kohen. Every animal that you shecht, the zor l'chai v'keva. What the Gemara in Chulin at the end of the Masechta just simply calls the matanos, the gifts.
The possession of the truma is not a problem, it's only eating it.
Yes, but hold your conclusion, however, because the Gemara is going to discuss more of this. Uvemechatas of Eferchatas, and also the other examples given in the Mishnah, Mechatas Eferchatas. If I have a solution of Mayim Chayim, spring water, and the ashes of the Paraduma, and a Mekarsha woman with it, the Kedushin works. It has an asset value. Now, it's kind of bizarre, by the way. In other words, who's owning it? In other words, usually this is property of the Beis HaMikdash. So the idea that you can have a private enterprise, a private individual owning it, it's really strange. Okay, and I am teasing, by the way, because we're really not going to be discussing it, but it's fair to just think about it and wonder, like, who is the private person owning it? And Efer Chatas, and just the ashes of the Paraduma alone. So that also has an asset value, and therefore you can be Mekadesh a woman using that. Okay. So, Amar Ula, Tova Sana'a Eino Mamun. Our last discussion for today's daf is going to be an interesting discussion. This idea comes up, expresses itself a number of times throughout Shas. And today, our last sugya, our last discussion over here today, is going to be Tova Sana. Okay. You know what I'm going to say. If you've been listening to me long enough, you know what I'm going to say, because I give this example every single time. Ask any politician. Right? You have the power to allocate and send funds to particular locations. Is that a value? So you ask any politician, and you bet it's a value. Right? Lobbyists are given good money to make sure that politicians are sending funds to particular to particular destinations. In other words, appropriations. Oh, and that politician now is going to be has not only power, but that power can actually have a value. Now, I know you're not allowed to bribe politicians, and I'm not suggesting for a moment that politicians get bribed. I'm not going to suggest it. I'm going to say it. That's what happens. Now, obviously, if they're caught, so that's illegal and that's illicit. And right now, this is not a time for moral judgment. This is just simply an observation. We all know that when you have the ability to allocate and appropriate, so you have now a power. It's a financial power. And so in halacha, that's what's called tova sana. So is that equivalent to mamon, yes or no? So over here, we don't have to go into politics and bribery. And we don't have to do any of that. We could just look at simply a farmer. A farmer out in his field where 2% is now truma. He takes off the 2%. Which coney is he going to give to? He can decide. He can decide. Since he has that ability to decide, so that is a value. And what I can do is I can go over to the farmer and say, look, I have a dear friend. His name is Alan Berger. And he's a Kohen. And I'd love it if he received your truma. And I can even go over to him and say to him, here's a consideration so that Alan will be the recipient of the truma. Oh.
I think you should do that.
Thank you.
The woman married with Isandu, she's kind of Tavasandu. Ah. That she wants to get
okay, there. Fine. So... Right. So right now, I'm setting ourselves up. So this Tova Sana now is definitely a value. It's definitely a value. There's nothing really to talk about. I mean, we all understand. We all can agree that it's a value. So what's the discussion? The discussion is it mammon? Since the beginning of the Masechta, we kept pointing out again and again. In other words, to be Mekadesh a woman, you need kesef or shava kesef. It's got to be money. So just because something has value doesn't necessarily mean it's mammon.
It's intangible.
Right, correct. So in other words, it's what we're looking at over here, a tangible asset. And so this is going to be our discussion. It's such an interesting discussion. And the Gemara is going to be deliberating that. And the Gemara is not going to conclude, but Ula's position could not be stated any stronger. In fact, I'm going to reread. Amar Ula, Tova Sana, Eino Mamon. So according to Ula's position, Tova Sana is not viewed as Mamon. Again, he's not disputing the fact that it's an asset, it's a value. It's just simply not Mamon, according to Ula. So Eitzvei, Rebbe Abel Ula, Mekadosh B'chum HaMaisos V'matanos V'mechadosh V'efer Parav Z'mekudeshes V'afilu Yisrael. And now all we're doing is we're looking at Ula, well, not we, but Rebbe Abba. But Rabbi Abba turns to Ula and says, did you not learn the last Mishnah of the second parak of Kiddushin? Meaning, read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, I'm Yisrael, I have Truma. I go over to a woman, and I say I want to make a Kaddish with the Truma, the Kiddushin works. Why? So presumably the reason why is because you know what the Truma has? It has an asset of appropriation, meaning Tova Sana. And so the value of the Truma is that determination, that allowance of me being able to decide which coin to give it to, and I'm being Mekadosh her not with the Truma per se, but the value of the Tova Sana in the Truma. Isn't that the right way to understand the Mishnah?
But you already decided which coin to give it to.
I already decided, but that ability is a value. So Amar le Hachabi Shoshanaflo Tvale mi base avi imo kohen v'kasaver matnu shlo humo kemishur humo damio. So the Gemara says, look, I know that's a way to learn the Mishnah, But in defense of Ula, we can learn the Mishnah differently. How are we going to learn the Mishnah differently? And that is as follows. You're not a Kohen, but you inherited Truma. How did you inherit Truma? Your maternal grandfather. Your maternal grandfather was a Kohen, and he had Truma. The truth of the matter is that he had Tevel. And Matno Shalo Horma Kemisha Horma Damyan. And even though the Truma that's in the Tevel is latent Truma, but nevertheless latent Truma is viewed as Truma, right? That's the idea of Matno Shalo Horma Kemisha Horma Damyan. And therefore, when you inherited it, so you're now inheriting the Truma from your maternal grandfather, and that is how you have ownership of actual Truma. Okay. I admit it's a little bit complicated, but we could learn the Mishnah that way. And therefore, the Mishnah no longer is speaking at all about Tova Sana. So, and now the Gemara continues this discussion whether or not Tova Sana is or is not Mamon. So, same back and forth. Meaning, Tovas or not, Mamon, yes or no? So the answer was no. What about the Mishnah? Oh, the Mishnah is talking about where, right, it's not talking about just Truma Stam, it's talking about where you inherited Truma. Okay. Different case. Amrle, Hotza'a At. So when Rav Huna hears this, what does he tell Rabbi Chiya Bar Abin? He says, Hotza'a At. Now, what did that mean? He didn't know. So Ichsef, so Rabbi Chia was embarrassed because he didn't understand what Rav Huna was saying to him. And so he was embarrassed. Who's over Mishmaita Kamarle? Now, when Rabbi Chia heard Rav Huna say to him, Hotza'at, basically you are removed, meaning you're so far removed from this discussion. You don't understand what's going on over here. You don't understand Shuma. You don't understand Tova Sana. Like, in other words, you're not following. Okay? That's what he heard from Rav Huna when he heard the words Hotza'at. So Amr le hachi kamina Rav Asi dehutzal kai kavasech. So Rav Huna clarified. No, that's not what I meant. What I meant was is that Rav Asi from the town of Hutzal, right? Hutza'a means the one from Hutzal is in agreement with you. Your pshat in the Mishnah, that was said over by Rav Asi. Okay. Nema ketanai. Finishing up over here, the second parak of the Masechta. The Gemara now is proposing whether or not Tova Sana is Mamon or is not Mamon, Machlok is Tanayim. And you now know what's going to happen. This is textbook. The Gemara is going to quote a Braisa. We have a Machlokis. The Gemara is going to try to suggest that the Nikud HaMachlokis is whether or not Tova Sana is Mamon or is not Mamon. And then what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to offer different ways to explain the Machlokis. This is just such a standard textbook Gemara. Nema Ketanai, Agonev Tivlo, Shel Chavero, Mishalayim Lo. Demei tivlo shel chaver divrei Rebbe. Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, Omer inu mishalem ela demei chulin shabo. Okay, so I go over to my neighbor. I steal his produce. He hasn't yet taken off trumas and maestros. So now, of that which I stole, how much of his did I steal? So in other words, trumas and maestros amounts to about 20%. So basically, 80% of it is his. 20% of it is not his. In other words, that needed to be allocated to Kohanim, Levim, Aniim, etc., etc. So how much do I need to reimburse when I steal his tevel? Some machlokas. According to Rebbe, I have to make reimbursement restitution of the entire amount. Where meanwhile, according to Rebbe Yosef and Rebbe Yehuda, I only have to reimburse him his chelek. I only have to reimburse 80%. So my la ba'akimilfagi marsavar tovasana'a mamon marsavar tovasana'a Eino Mamon. And now, what is the Nekuda Machlokas? Whether or not Tovas Ana is Mamon or not Mamon? According to Rabbi, Tovas Ana is Mamon, so therefore the 20%, even though the victim, the farmer who you stole from, even though he doesn't own the Truma, but he can allocate, and that allocation is Mamon. Now, it's interesting, by the way, it's really interesting, because initial formulation of here's how to explain the machlokas. It's a little bit difficult to understand. Meaning, even if Tova Sana is mamon, you mean to tell me that the Tova Sana is dollar for dollar the truma? Meaning that I can receive some sort of kickback in terms of determining which coin it is that I'm going to give. You think that kickback is going to be dollar for dollar the value of the truma? It's going to be less. Okay. So I have to admit, even as the Gemara presents it this way, it is challenging to understand. And the Gemara says, "Lo, the kulei ama tofas ana ina mamon." No, it could very well be that everyone holds that tofas ana is not mamon. And vahacha betvalim shenafel lo mi beit avia imo kohen and v'matna shlohor makimishur madamyan kamifel gemar sefer kimishur madamyan umar sefer lav kimishur madamyan. So the Gemara says that maybe what's the issue over here is that you inherited truma from your maternal grandfather, and it was tevel, and he died, and you now inherited it, and there was latent truma. So was he the owner of the latent truma, yes or no? And that could be the nekudah machlokas. It could be that latent truma is in fact viewed as truma, and it could be that tovas hana'a is not mamon. Another way to explain the machlokas is whether or not we subscribe to the rule of Shmuel. What is the rule of Shmuel? This too we hear all the time throughout Shas. The rule of Shmuel is as follows. How much truma do I have to give to a kohen? There is a recommended amount, 2%. Okay, and with a range. If you're more generous, right, 2.5. If you're less generous, approximately 1.5. Okay, these are approximations. Right, the way the Gemara expresses it, it's either going to be a 40th, a 50th, or a 60th. A 50th being 2%. Okay, so so that is a recommended amount. What's the minimum that you have to give to the kohen? According to Shmuel, chita achas. You have an entire harvest, a silo full of grain. According to Shmuel, you can go in there, take out one grain, give it to the kohen, and the rest now has been correct and rectified. Now, I say that, by the way, and that's not really fully accurate. You're still Maiserishin that you have to take off, and within the Maiserishin, there's still Trumas Maiser. But in other words, vis-a-vis your Truma Gedola obligation, you only need to take off one grain, Chita Achas Poter Sesakri. Now, if you subscribe to Shmuel, so that means to say that obviously there's a recommended amount that you need to give to the Kohen, but the truth of the matter is that Me Iker Hadin, the strict letter of the law, the only amount that you need to give is only one grain. So really, you could view the rest of it as property of the farmer. And so therefore, when making reimbursement, you have to reimburse on practically everything. Okay. That's if I subscribe to Shmuel. And if I don't subscribe to Shmuel, so the 2% is a real number. So that means to say that 2% doesn't belong to the farmer. And therefore, when I steal from him, I don't have to reimburse him that 2%.
This one grain, where's the Thomas and Noah?
Right. Correct. Okay. Correct. Correct. Right. In other words, very good. So, Ibai Zemetikulam Alaisa Dushmuel. It could very well be we're giving now another way to explain the machlokas. No one subscribes to Shmuel. And, time of the Rebbe, the consumer Rabban Laganov. And it could very well be that over here is just a kenas. It's just that we're penalizing the Ganov. Meaning, right, you probably saw this coming. So, right, someone stole your grain. Right, 20% of it doesn't belong to the farmer. Those are the percentage that needs to be given to Kohanim Levim and Aniyim. But still, you're a ganav. You stole. So the Chachamim said to you, look, even though according to the strict letter of the law, only 80% of it belonged to the farmer, but we're going to force you to make a reimbursement of 100%. Why? Because you're a ganav, and we want to penalize you. It could be that simple. Okay, yes. In other words, right. What happens with that penalized amount, it's a great follow-up question. I'm sorry, the Katsum Rabban Laganov, I read that. Maybe everyone subscribes to Shmuel. V'hachainu time at the Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda. The Katsum Rabban Labalabayez, alo ibay l'lishu l'tivle. Everyone really holds of Shmuel, which really means that the entire amount actually belongs to the farmer. So then, according to Rebbe, you understand why full reimbursement is necessary. Full restitution is necessary. That's easy to understand. And what about according to Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda? Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda says we're going to penalize the farmer. This is really strange. But I'm going to try to explain it. In other words, normally we don't penalize the victim. Normally we don't. However, I'll tell you where there was fault on the part of the victim. And that is that we know that once you have harvested and you brought everything into the silo, when should you be taking off Trumas and Maisos? Immediately. Right away. So you have now delayed and lingered and procrastinated in taking off your Trumas and Maisos. You know what? We say to the farmer, the thief stole from you. Obviously, he shouldn't have stole from you. Obviously, he's bad, or the action is bad, however you want to say it. But in other words, but a little bit on you, you didn't take off Trumas and Maisos right away. So our last point for today, first we start with our mission, which we now know, we've heard it already 3-4 times. And Ephra Mikla. If you're paid to provide services that you are required to do, like serve as a judge, like serve as a witness, like sprinkling someone with the Parah Aduma, and you're paid for that, so number one, you shouldn't have gotten paid. In other words, those are mitzvos, and you should be doing that pro bono. Okay, that's number one. Number two is that the judgment is rendered a non-judgment. A witness getting paid, by the way, obviously, it's like a, kind of an obvious point. That's called bribery. It's called shochad. So, but obviously now the entire case falls apart. And the Kohen who's sprinkling the Parah Aduma, so he gets paid to do so. So the sprinkling is rendered invalid. Now, so over here, the Gemara is bothered. So in our Mishnah, our Mishnah says that being mekadesh with the meipara, the efapara works. Wait 1 second. If you sprinkle somebody with it, it's rendered invalid. Amar Rabbi Lokasha kan bischar hava umilui kan bischar hazavi kiddush. So the Gemara says the way to resolve that is actually really simple, and that is that if I'm getting paid for any services anticipatory. Right, the preparatory stages of the Parah Aduma. Right, we need spring water. Could you go get spring water? Sure, no problem at all. By the way, right, as long as I'm doing you a favor, you know the fetching of the spring water is, you know, it's a schlep. Right, normally you would have to pay for that. Can I be mekadesh with you for those services? So there, that's not the actual sprinkling. It's just a hachana. It's a machshir. That service is now something where you could charge for that service and you could be mekadesh for that service. But then the actual hazah itself, that you can't charge. Okay, good. And Deka Namin, the Gemara says, and this distinction, perfect distinction, Diktani Hacham and Mechatos Ve'efer Para, so Viktani Hasam Lahazus L'Kadish Mamina, right? Careful reading would indicate that this distinction that we made, perfect. It was a really good distinction. Hadron Lachish Mekadesh, and that is the end of the second parak of the Masechta. Yes, Hashem, tomorrow we begin parak number 3 of the Masechta, less than a month to go before the conclusion of the Kiddushin, the conclusion of Seder Nashim.